Welcome back.
Well, thank you to Meg. Wonderful to be here.
And with her is Playwright Inc. Executive Director and Founder Bruce Livingston. Hello, Bruce.
Hi, Demay.
I think thanks, you're the first timer here, even though we've known each other. This is your first time here, isn't it?
That's very true. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. And hello to Director J. Austin Williams of American King Umps at Passant Art Theater in collaboration with Damaris Webb. Welcome.
Thank you very much,
Demay. It's good to have
it's
you here.
It's a delight to be here.
Welcome all to stage and studio. Now, Nicole, I don't know how you do it. I really, really do, not because I ask you this every year. You work full-time at Artist Repertory Theater, yet all through the year you have this volunteer sort of gig, I mean maybe almost volunteer gig, of putting together this massive Fertile Ground Festival in collaboration with the Portland Area Theater Alliance, actually presented by the Portland Area Theater Alliance. I know there's a ton of people that are working on it. There has to be. But I just am amazed that you pull this off every year.
I'm really amazed also.
I mean, if you were to say, you know, to do a condensed, like, 1-minute version of what your theater, you know, your yearly schedule is of Fertile Ground, what is it? How does it kind of go throughout the year? Like,
well, we start working on the website and revamping the website in July, and then we open up registration for producers starting in August, and then that goes until middle of October, spilling into November, and then we put together the festival guide at that point. And the festival guide gets out the beginning of December, and then it's full court press until the beginning of February.
So you have like maybe 3 months, is it, where you have a little bit of a break?
Yeah, there's a little break. There's a little recuperation.
Little break there. But this year the festival is January 23rd through February 2nd, and it's in venues all over Portland. How many venues do you think, if you were to count them?
We've got 40 venues this year,
yeah.
And that changes just year to year, but there's 40 venues, and about 43 producers, there are over 75 what we call acts of creation. That does not mean that there are 75 separate things to go to, but within a single showing, there could be a number of artists presented. A number of artists' work, whether it's dance or theater. And so if you count them all up, it's over 75.
Wow. And you must have counted them up then. So that was my next question, if you did a tally. What's theater? I mean, the majority are theater, and then there is dance. But then there's some that cross over, aren't there? Some multidisciplinary.
There are some areas that cross over, and it changes every year because Fertile Ground is uncurated. I never really know what's going to happen and what's going to come through. The door is pretty much thrown wide open to whatever someone wants to create and present. The situation is that this has to be new, and it needs to be a preponderance of Portland people working on the show. So this year, there's only really kind of, well, there's comedy. It's character comedy. It's not sketch comedy. It's character comedy. And so there's that. Then there's theater and there's dance. There is a dance organization that's putting together a production that has film influenced as well. That's the Clinton Street Theater.
Oh, which one is that one?
It's called Heirloom. Sub Rosa Dance Collective is putting that together. And that really looks visually beautiful. The pictures they have coming in are just fantastic.
And Polaris Dance also is doing that Groovin' Greenhouse one that they have a lot of different dance companies involved in it.
Right. They have, I want to say it's like seven to nine different nights, and each night presents three different art groups or dance companies. And this is, I think, their fourth year doing this. Really fantastic way to get out and see a lot of the dance that you may or may not typically see. Like I was saying, there is an example of it's one show, but you're getting
a ton of people.
You're getting three different three different acts, which could be a whole bunch of different choreographers.
And a lot of different artists are featured then in just in that one event.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty much anybody who applies, if they make the deadline.
Well, they need to make the deadline, and really, if it's new work, and if you can tell me that you're an artist or a producing organization, and the work that you're presenting is new, or at least in the state that you're presenting it is new, because it had been a staged reading before,
but now it could be a new production
in
Portland.
Version of it. Yeah, it could be a new. Well, it needs to be a Portland-based production,
okay.
Or it needs to be the preponderance of people need to be working from as Portland artists. But sometimes a show will start out as a stage reading and then come back to the festival the next year or the year after as a further along in development. And that also is very exciting.
And sometimes they don't necessarily come back, but they go on to other theaters. For instance, I'm thinking of Sue Mock's play, Artist Repertory, mm-hmm. The Lost Boy, that mm-hmm. went to Artist Repertory. So it started off as Fertile Ground, didn't it? Productions did.
Yeah, that particular production didn't. But there's lots of examples where shows will have started in Fertile Ground and then go elsewhere. Claire Willett is a local playwright, and she often, and I know that one of her, I think it was Dear Galileo, which was a Fertile Ground show last year, went on to the Pasadena Playhouse, not as a full production, but as another reading. So it's just really exciting because it gains those playwrights and those choreographers some notoriety and something to stick in their PR about the show.
So when people buy a pass, what are they, we can't mention how much it is, but it really is pretty affordable for most folks, mm-hmm. Considering how much, if you use it a lot, I mean, how much savings you're getting seeing these productions. But what does it give you access to?
It gives you access to any, in theory, any show that's in Fertile Ground. And now you need to make it allow you access to many, many shows. And for the price that you would cover the cost of that pass, and be supporting Fertile Ground and be supporting what we do at Fertile Ground, which is give out to a wide audience as opposed to people in their living room.
So it's the sixth year. Is it getting easier to do to organize Fertile Ground?
Getting easier. It is getting easier. I've got a program down. However, we do make changes, and it's just the nature of the beast that you just always have to be on your toes.
And you are. I know you. You are just so on top of everything. So that's amazing that this happens every year. Fertile Ground is a citywide festival of new work, and it's in its sixth year. Portland Plays hosts hundreds of playwrights. And if you want to follow along, look at the calendar and schedule some things while we're talking today. Visit fertilegroundpdx.org, and you can get that link also at stageandstudio.org. Well, there's so many events that we could talk about, and it's hard to just choose some, but I wanted to get some highlights from Nicole later on, but let's talk to Jay and Bruce here. Jay Austin Williams, you're directing American King Umps, A Midsummer Night's Melodrama on the Tragedy of Slavery. What a title that is.
That's a mouthful, isn't
and
it?
It's a new play by Don Wilson Glenn, and it's presented by Damaris Webb in association with Passant Art Theater, and I couldn't find out much about the play. It's a new play.
Yes.
What's your description of it? How would you describe it?
It's a broad satire. It's a mashup, really, of a lot of different aesthetics and styles. It really does have melodrama in it, has a great deal of satirical comedy in it. What it does extraordinarily well is that it raises a lot of questions that are really productive and useful about slavery in this new age, in the 21st century, and it enables us to contemplate slavery differently because the satire is so broad and because he is putting an historical event, which is actually somewhat, once or twice removed autobiographical, in that I think it is Don's great-great-grandfather that had a series of experiences around Juneteenth in Texas that got passed down, through the folklore by way of the folk, and was about a kind of an extraordinary event amongst slave folks about the death of, or the presumed murder of, a slave master. And so we're able to contemplate what death, family, we can just mix up a whole lot of different thematics and toss them up and contemplate them. Death, family, love, loyalty, heritage, inheritance, all of these things come through because he's playing with Shakespeare and the Greeks and slave lore in these fascinating ways.
Well, it's a delicate edge to play, mm-hmm. Doing a satirical look at the slavery period in mm-hmm. America. Mm-hmm. And you've described it as melodrama, satire.
Yes.
Do African-American actors play plantation owners, too? So it's all across the board, they're playing all the roles?
It's different in the sense of, yes, they play, there's a, for example, there's a lot of tension between, you know, that brings to bear issues of skin tone and how the miscegenation, as it happened in, on the plantations a lot. The,
like
the
there's a hierarchy, inter- too.
Yes, there really is. And he really is critiquing and examining that pretty staunchly. This notion that a light-skinned black man who's basically a fugitive slave actually is going to become is the prospective new master after the slave master is done in. So that enables quite a fascinating and rife conversation between the slaves in the play, as a matter of fact. And so it's really quite compelling.
Well, what makes that American King Ump stand out in the canon of African-American plays? I think that how you described it kind of makes it in of itself that is a comedy.
Exactly, that it's a comedy in and of itself. But the fact that it's a satirical comedy, which of course enables a much more, much deeper thinking about the institution and how it has remained with us and the ways in which making slave being a melodramatic state enables us to sort of break open the psychic life of slaves and also the psychic life of the slave descended so that we can actually think in terms of slavery as something we're still very much contemplating in the present day. And that's something that is really, really hard for us to all sit with and contemplate, but we are able to because of how Don Wilson Glenn is dealing with the themes and so many of the themes. So there's a real sophistication to how he uses humor, how he uses the classics, how he sort of plays with the notion that, you know, like I have a classical, dear friend who is a concert pianist, goes all over the place, and he has actually said to me, he said, you know, I've always found it remarkable how classical, like jazz musicians can just go all over the stratosphere playing jazz riffs and can riff on classical motifs, you know, to beat the band, but it very rarely works in reverse. So what Don is doing with this play is really doing a whole series of riffs on Shakespeare and on the Greeks and on the Romans. And we see all of that happening. He's doing those turns to a very, very sophisticated end, which is to forge a deeper contemplation of slavery as something beyond just an historical event that can be charted in a single period of time, but that actually carries forward in very insidious and very difficult ways, you know,
well,
that haunt the present.
I think that's a beautiful American King Umps. What is Umps?
Yeah, well, I think Umps was just a kind of a name that, if I understand it correctly, was just a name that Don's great-great-grandfather had or was known by.
Oh, okay.
But the king comes from the slave master's name, king of the the head of the plantation.
Wow.
His name was King, so it was the King Cotton Plantation because they grew cotton. That was their contribution to the economic ebb and flow of the South. And then
that makes sense now. Okay.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great title, but it kind of draws you in to ask that question.
Absolutely.
So I'm also, in hearing you describe it, also thinking about the Colored Museum, Walker's that, and that had such a satiric edge to it, too.
Very much
and it can
so.
Be very effective.
Absolutely.
It can be very effective. Now, you've got a distinguished history of directing African-American plays around the country, and you teach theater. Do you still teach theater at UC Irvine?
Yes, I'm a visiting assistant professor at UC Irvine, and had a glorious experience. I got to work with the African-American MFA actors down there focusing on August Wilson's Pittsburgh cycle. And because the actors themselves knew that they needed to read Wilson more deeply. First of all, he's not being produced a whole lot, although I understand he is actually being produced right here in Portland.
Yeah, I was going to suggest the Red Door Project and Kevin Jones.
Kevin Jones, who I'm so looking forward to meeting. And so I was just really excited to hear that. But, you know, the notion that actors are understanding that they, first of all, need to read Wilson, period, and also need to read him more deeply, because I think what prompts a lot of my work, I directed a production of Colored Museum, it's great that you mentioned that, down at UC Irvine, that was just an extraordinary experience from start to finish. But the idea that reread plays by Black authors and bring the kind of the ensemble of questions around the ways in which the modern day is still haunted by slavery and the relations that have come out of slavery, even the more insidious ones that haunt the everyday life and everyday interactions.
Well, it's so great to have you here in Portland.
It's a pleasure to be here in Portland. I'm loving it here.
American King Umps, a Midsummer Night's Melodrama on the Tragedy of Slavery, new play by Don Wilson Glenn, directed by J. Austin Williams, presented by Damaris Webb in association with Pass and Art. Performances are January 3rd. Through February 16th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 7 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. All performances are at Ethos IFCC, located at 5340 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. Tickets are available at the door for cash purchase 30 minutes before curtain or in advance at brownpapertickets.com. And it's all ADA accessible. And you can also get that information at fertilegroundpdx.org. And you can buy a pass and see all of these shows. So I'm D. Mae Roberts talking with Fertile Ground Festival of New Work with Nicole Lane, Festival Director. And we just talked with J. Austin Williams at Pass and Art Theater. And Bruce Livingston, you're the Executive Director of Playwright Inc. And, I know what Playwright Inc. does, but tell us a little bit about, just sort of what the mission is and what you do.
Our mission is really engaging young people in playwriting workshops. We take a fairly broad definition of young people up to age 25, and they define themselves actually as youth at the edge, which is a great definition that could get workshops with these kids. They're matched one-on-one with writing coaches and actors to in the process of creating a play.
So you work with professional actors as well as with, I don't want to say underserved communities, but they are, aren't they?
By and large, there are a number of common threads. Yet at the same time, I think every adolescent is
kind of underserved.
And right. Underserved. Yeah, there's a lot of overlap. In fact, two of the actors in Jay and Damaris's production, Damaris and Paul Susie, are also coaches and performers with Playwright.
Well, you do the workshops and events all throughout the year. But for Fertile Ground, you're doing a special evening. It's called Word Voice. And that's on January 26th at 7 p.m. at the Girding Theater at the Armory. And it's a free performance. And what's happening at Word Voice? What is that production?
It's our annual showcase. We gather together youth who have written plays over the years. We go back 10 years now. And at the show on the 26th, we'll have a couple of early graduates. Maxwell Falk, who graduated our program in 2005, he'll be reading some poetry, I think. He's now a junior at Lewis and Clark College on the Dean's Scholarship, which
is that's impressive.
Terrific. Yes. And we'll have a selection of pieces, character sketches, and short plays written by youth throughout the previous year.
Wow, that is, congratulations on that. So when you say early graduates, what does that mean to graduate from Playwright Inc.? What does that entail?
Our workshop is intensive. It's hard. It's really hard work. It's 27 hours spread over 3 weeks. The coaches are pushing the students every bit of the way, and it's a complicated thing. The festival is of new works, and all of these things that we do are indeed new works. They're often the first time that any of these young people have written something and certainly have created a play. So graduating is a real tough process. Our coaches are in their face. Our coaches can give them no leads, no suggestions. Every word, every idea has to come entirely from the kids. That's a dangerous place. I often quote to them, Jane Hirschfield's notion that the biggest block to creativity that we have, and I pair that with the observation that every creative artist, be it theatrical, literary, painter, whatever, musical, all uses their own life experiences to create art. And so we encourage them, we support them in that process, but also hammer deeply into them that it's not worth it if it's not getting at your real emotional truth that underlies your motivations.
It's hard work because you're training as well as producing a new original work. So kudos to you and to Playwright, because I know you work really hard at it. And I think that it's all free for the people who are taking the workshops.
That's correct.
So it's a service to the community. What else does Playwright have going on for the rest of the year? I mean, have you started? This is your culmination showcase. So are you starting off a new project after this?
Actually, we're just now finishing a workshop at New Avenues for Youth, and that performance is this afternoon at 2 o'clock at ART on the Morrison stage, thanks to Nicole.
So if you can make it, it's at 2 o'clock today.
It should be a great show. And then we've got workshops scheduled throughout the year. We're working with White Shield Center, with Rosemont School and Treatment Center, with Youth Progress, Mount Scott Learning Center, a big wide range of groups throughout the Tri-County area.
And people can find out more at playwrightinc.org. So
yes,
playwrightinc.org.
And we do spell playwright a funny way.
P-L-A-Y-W-R-I-T-E. Yeah, because they write.
That's right.
These plays. Playwright Inc. presents Word Voice, a performance of works in progress and completed plays and new works by past Playwright graduates. The admission is free on January 26th at 7 p.m. Main stage, Girding Theater, Armory. That's located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. And you can find out more at playwrightinc.org. And I also have that link at stageandstudio.org. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Demi Roberts. We're talking about Fertile Ground Festival of New Works, and you can find out more at fertilegroundpdx.org. And we're kind of coming to the finish line here, Nicole. Mm-hmm. But a couple of things that kind of caught my eye, too, are the Portland Playhouse and the August Wilson Red Door Project, which we had mentioned a little bit earlier. My Walk Has Never Been Average by Roberta S. Hunter. Well, Arts is doing Stories for Portland by teenage girls aged 14 to 18 and at the Boys and Girls Aid. Uh-huh. Anything else that's kind of different from that? I mean, there's a lot of diversity here.
There is a lot of diversity, and I had mentioned Heirloom at Sub Rosa Dance Collective out at the Clinton Street Theater, so that's very new and interesting. But there's so much, and it's all over Portland. This year we have Lakewood Theater coming in with four staged readings down in that neck of the woods.
Yeah, I noticed that Lakewood is doing that this year, which is great. They're original works.
I know. And then out on 82nd, Iter Collective, or Post 5 Theater, excuse me, are producing a number of works, including a Bon Temps Roulé at the Shakespeare Cafe, and that's written and directed by Elizabeth Huffman, who is well known here in Portland. An interesting take on Shakespeare, and it's set in New Orleans, and that should be pretty cool. And then they are also doing a play called Therapy Hunger, talking about how, you know, the pharmaceutical industry has kind of taken over many people's lives. And then there's a lot going on inner East Side, inner West Side.
All over Portland.
It's just really all
Fame,
over.
Fame, I wanted to do a shout out for, mm-hmm. too. It's a short plays by students of the Fame Academy. And Wink Productions, which is a new production company, presents Remy's Run, a new play by Wayne Harrell, who is a playwright that I've known for a few years back, mm-hmm. but he's
also
playwriting.
That's also at Portland Playhouse.
There you go. So there's such a wide variety of works. I just want to encourage everybody to, you know, check out the Fertile Ground Festival of New Works presented by Portland Area Theater Alliance, January 24th to February 3rd. You can find out more about all the plays at fertilegroundpdx.org or stageandstudio.org. And you can get a snazzy brochure if you go to their website and figure out how to do that. So actually, Nicole, we're going to give away a pair of tickets. So what do you suggest that what's the giveaway? You determine what the giveaway is going to be, because there's so much to choose from.
So the giveaway is whoever is the first caller will be in touch, and they can select whatever show that they want to see, and I will try to get them a couple of tickets to see it.
I recommend American King Umps for sure. So Nicole Lane, Bruce Livingston, and Jay Austin Williams, thanks so much for joining us today. The time just went by.
Yes.
It was so good to have you here. So actually, I should do this. If you do want to win a pair of tickets, just call now at 503-231-5106, 231-5106. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much,
Dime.
Thank you,
Dime.
Yes, this was a delight.
Before we go today, check out a special Skype talk that I'm doing with playwright David Henry Wong tonight at Portland Center Stage. That's tonight at January 21st at 6:30, right before the Tuesday evening performance of Chinglish at Portland Center Stage. I'm also directing a free reading of one of Huang's first plays, The Dance in the Railroad, with Heath Hewen Halton and Samson Ziereth on Monday, January 27th at 7 p.m. at Portland Center Stage. That's located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thank you, Janet Anderson, our engineer. And if you missed any of this interview, go to stageandstudio.org. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. More music by David Ornette Cherry at davidornettecherry.com.
Tune to KBOO Portland. Up next is Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University with five part-time MBA programs that combine classic business skills with an emphasis on creative thinking, ethical decision-making, and sound judgment, the hallmarks of a liberal arts perspective. January 25th, information session, merrillhurst.edu. And by the Museum of the Oregon Territory presenting Willamette Falls, Where the Future Began, a day of exhibits, papermaking, workshops, film, and tribal art, Saturday, February 1st in Oregon City. Willamette Falls will include a blessing song by the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, the Once Lost Fish Mural, a kids' concert by Spider Moccasin, and more. Details at clackamashistory.org.
Scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, silver
screen. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Bonnie Meltzer. The North Portland artist has a show now at the University of Portland Buckley Center Gallery called Coal, Not in Any Backyard. Welcome to Art Focus, Bonnie.
Glad to be here.
The show is protest art. It's about not having coal moving through the Northwest. Is that the right?
Yes, it's a very big issue. There were proposed six coal ports. We're down to three. And it isn't that we would benefit from anything. We're just a pass-through, a corridor, an alleyway of coal being mined in Montana and Wyoming, coming through the Northwest, ruining the Northwest, and then getting on big mega ships and going off to Asia.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been aware of this issue, and how long have you been making art about it?
Almost 2 years. Started going to hearings and meetings and reading everything in sight. Started making art last year about it. It was kind of in my mind. I was in Blackfish Gallery passing out literature about a rally that my husband and I put together. And a week later, I got a phone call and said, "We have a cancellation for art up." And I said, "Okay." And then I went, "Oh my God, what have I done?" Month and a half to put this together.
And I did an installation, which is, by the way, in the University of Portland show in a different configuration. But it's a big piece. It's made up of three components. But I put a little, I love Facebook. I put a little call out and said, anyone want to help me make this? And I had these people in my backyard who we had a big workshop. Mm-hmm. And about 10 people came. And they cut out things and pasted things. They worked on a module.
Mm-hmm.
I had 84 of them. And it was just wonderful for them to work on it. And it was a way of getting the work done.
What was that piece called?
That piece was called, I can't remember what it was. It was called No Coal, No Coal, K-N-O-W, N-O, Coal.
Mm-hmm.
But since I did the piece, which it has maps on it of North Portland and Southeast Portland and our general area, those were the two routes that were eliminated because the people withdrew from the proposals. So I said, okay, I want to use this piece, but I want to make it more up to date. And so I now call it Three Down, Three to Go. And so along the route, I interspersed text that said things like, three down, three to go, pulled out, not enough money, lost investors, all the things that made these things mm-hmm. pull out. So it gave it it was updated.
So the rally you were involved with your husband was
anti-coal
transport projects.
Yes.
And then the idea of making art of it came about.